Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. We are back again with Rob Orman, yes, the man, and we are here to talk all about the goodness that he's got to mention to us today. And basically, this is going to be a continuation of the conversation that we had. Now, if you had not heard last week's talk with Rob Orman, go ahead and go back to that and then come back to this. Basically, last time was all about patient satisfaction, but it's still good to listen to. We're going to talk a lot about different stuff today. Some things we've talked a little bit about in the past, but this is a nice new perspective thanks to Rob Orman. So let's not delay this any further.
Yeah, so next up on the grab bag, speaking of...
The grab bag.
So this may be a two-parter grab bag. Who knows? We'll just head to grab bags all day.
Okay. So to speak. So was this PG? What's going on?
I don't think we've earned the E yet, have we? You're the expert on that. Okay, so I have a couple of colleagues. I said, dude, I'm getting Rob Orman on this show. What do you want to ask him about? And I had a really good question because this actually came up recently in one of your ERcast episodes. I guess you call them episodes. Are episodes? Podcasts?
Yeah, I guess it's an episode. Sure.
An episode with Rob Orman.
Episode. There we go. Well, let's just call it an episode.
Yeah, stay tuned for next time. But I loved it because you briefly, I guess a nurse practitioner had asked you a question about, you know, what you liked, what you didn't like, so on and so forth. So I'm going to slightly reframe that question and ask, what's your take on PAs? And I guess we can include NPs, although it is different in some ways. I think that sometimes gets a little missed or ignored. And what you find as pros and cons of working with PAs. I want your honest opinion, sir.
Well, I will give it. I've worked with many PAs and many NPs. And it's interesting because right now I'm doing a chart review for all of our APPs. And we've got, you know, PAs and NPs and the like. And, you know, to be frank, I am so amazed by the differential diagnosis and the clinical approach and just the fund of knowledge that all of these people have. Now, granted, they're all really experienced, are seeing pretty sick patients. So that's my current experience. And that's actually been my experience throughout. So I've worked with some who are new or green, and someone coming fresh out of PA school. I mean, Amol said this when we were chatting. I don't remember where we were talking about this. Is that his expectation of a new intern is that they know nothing but are completely dependable and reliable. I see it a little bit that way. Now, someone coming out of PA school, it's a little bit different than someone coming out of med school because before you even get there, you're expected to have some clinical experience. The training, maybe it's a little more clinically applicable, but you get clinical training in medical school. Yet, someone who is an intern in medicine is often much more heavily supervised than someone who is fresh out of PA school and is now seeing patients primarily, right? I mean, talk about in the emergency department, oftentimes it is the fast track or the urgent track, but sometimes it's, you know, it's just whatever patient. And that lack of supervision or lack of direct supervision or direct instruction does a tremendous disservice to PA and the patient. And I've found that, you know, giving directed training advice to someone who is fresh out, what I try to recommend if I'm working with a new PA or NP is to get depth of knowledge of a topic, because what you've had in your training is breadth of knowledge, but what you need now is depth. The scary thing is when you're starting out is you are faced with everything. It's like, whoa, I need to have expertise in all of this stuff immediately right now. You don't if you have proper supervision or appropriate access to someone who is more clinically experienced, whoever that is. But when you learn about something, let's say it's ankle fractures, let's just call that something we all see, then really study that to gain expertise. There's no reason that somebody who has a PA degree or an MD degree has to have a different level of knowledge about that particular entity, because we can each study it to the same depth. Now, the MD is coming in with much more fund of knowledge and a deeper education, But for the specific things that you're seeing, just try to have mastery of each topic and then go on to the next one. Granted, you're going to be learning things on the job. And really the best guide for this, for, you know, trying to gain mastery or at least, you know, pursue that, is looking at the things you saw, maybe saw repeatedly, didn't know about, and, you know, really just going deep into it. And that's kind of an issue, is that, you know, it's not just an issue that's, you know, just for PAs. It's, you know, that's anybody to say, oh, I'll just go get a little bit of knowledge. But boy, I think that if you can go deep and you can just, you know, have that level, it serves your clinical practice so much more. Now, another thing when you're asking, you know, you really wanted my honest opinion, I get so many emails about, you know, the different nomenclature of mid-level or PA, or you need to say APP. It drives me freaking crazy. I have no idea what to say. I feel like I'm paralyzed vocally. I mean, it's just, and I get, and the thing is, you know, I've, you know, one of my best friends is a PA, and just, you know, I don't really care what, how he wants to be referred. But the thing is, I get letters like, oh yeah, you should call us mid-levels. This APP business is stupid. And then someone else saying, you know, the term is APP. Saying mid-levels is derogatory. Oh my gosh, I don't even know what to think anymore.
Can I give my two cents on this real quick?
Well, it's your show, sir.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess it is.
have at it. You know what? I could even say no, and then you could do a voiceover. So yeah, I guess, yeah, have your say.
Just
your
sneak
say.
In there. Personally, my preference, and I don't understand why this is such a big deal. I'm not personally a fan of mid-level. I'm not personally a fan of APP. I'm actually, honest to God, what I would like to hear is just PA or NP or PA and NP. And if you notice, most of the time, unless I'm doing something for someone to keep them happy, I'm usually saying PAs and NPs. And the reason why is because it is different. And really, that's what we are. We're PAs and we're NPs. You know, we're not APPs. We're not mid-levels. I think that's just my personal preference. And the reason why is because let's differentiate. Let's talk about who we are. Let's go back to the basics. You're a PA, you're an NP, you're whatever else. Because, you know, CRNAs sometimes get included in that same level. Any number of things, I feel like, get included in that level. But what I really like what you just mentioned is that getting the basics and getting the understanding. And you're right. It doesn't matter what you're title or degree is, MD, DO, PA, MP, whatever, we all have to have the fundamental knowledge and we all have to be able to get that depth. You're right. School is great for the breadth, understanding, kind of building that differential, kind of getting the basics up. But it's not until you really start looking at it yourself we had that. And I admit the Dunning-Kruger effect for me, I think was true at the beginning for sure. I think I've gotten past my Mount Stupid. I hope.
Now, is Dunning-Kruger something you have said on your show before? Is that, would your listeners know what that is? Because it's such an important topic and a truism that is probably only recently come to like wide public knowledge.
You know, I think I pulled a Scott Weingart. It's like, yeah, I've talked about it before. I don't think I actually have. I think I talk about it enough to my students. Every student who has ever went with me since I've learned about the Dunning-Kruger effect, I have taught them the Dunning-Kruger effect. And I've taught anyone who comes new out of school, whether it's our nurses, our tech, whatever it is, I go over the Dunning-Kruger effect with them. Like, admit it or not, you are stupid and it's okay to be stupid, but just don't get anyone killed at the same time and get past your Mount Stupid and go back into the Valley of Despair. Because when you get through that Valley of Despair, out on the other side comes a new you, the new great you that's going to be the great clinician that's going to help save people and take care of people properly. But you got to get through your Mount Stupid and you got to get through your Valley of Despair. And I think I finally edged my way through my Valley of Despair and I'm just kind of crawling up through the ranks, getting back on top here. God, I need videos so you can see me trying to crawl up in the air.
Yeah. All right, so here's Wikipedia's definition. So it's a cognitive bias in which low ability individuals, so that would be a new learner, suffer from illusory superiority, such as when you're in your first year of medical school or PA school and you're diagnosing people with X, Y, and Z, mistakenly assessing their ability as much higher than it really is. So it is the feeling of expertise when you really don't know a thing.
That just sums it up perfectly. Good Wikipedia definition. Like it.
well, there was, I had some embellishment on it, but you know, I mean,
that's some embellishment. I mean, you do such a great job, the voice of radio and all. So I mean that in the best way. Hopefully that doesn't come. Sometimes I come across the wrong way. My wife has to act as my censor, but I edit this myself.
It's so funny that you say that. So Adam Rowe, he'll probably be shocked when I say this. So here you go. You're going to get your explicit rating. Boom. Right now. So he and I do some work together. He was, we do our local journal club together. We did a podcast together recently, and we were the other day, we were having lunch talking about some projects, and he's a super smart guy, super smart guy. And we're talking about this stuff, and he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm really interested. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good. And he like had a total poker face. And then he texts me after we got back to our respective homes. He said, hey, you know, just wanted to let you know, I'm like super excited about these projects, but my wife tells me that whenever I'm excited or I'm not excited, I always look like I'm taking a shit. So just so you know, I'm super excited, and don't let my calm poker facial expressions say otherwise.
Oh my God, my wife needs to listen to this because she's going to say, yep, that's you. Like, because, oh yeah, my face sometimes, well, since we already gained the E, she has the perfect resting bitch face, but she teaches, so she's got to have the perfect resting bitch face. And sometimes I've got that too. I just get called a jackass for it. So I guess it's slightly different. I guess we should go slightly back on topic again. But what I was going to say with that depth of knowledge there is, luckily with my training, we didn't call it a residency, but basically my first year I worked my ass off. I was basically working up to 80, 90 hour weeks coming fresh out of school. I was in internal medicine, walk-in clinic type, doing home visits and working in the emergency department, doing a little bit of ICU time. So I'm working in five different settings and I'm learning all this different stuff from some great educators, but I feel like they helped save me from my own Dunning-Kruger effect of Mount Stupid, because I had someone there helping guide me along the way. And I feel like for new grads especially, you got to be careful about this. And again, this happens to anyone. It doesn't matter the title. But that's the thing I've noticed is I feel like having that little bit of a residency or having that little time period where basically you're a lot more closely watched. You know, this is not the, oh, I do one shift and yeah, it looks like you do okay. You know the EHR now. Let's go ahead and move on. This is truly a learning process. And I think that's something that we take a little bit for granted, especially in emergency medicine. It's kind of, well, you know, we only can pay you for so many days of training. You need to get on this real quick. So I feel like for me, that's one of the big things I see. A question I had for you regarding that too. Again, we're getting feedback, and the feedback I've gotten from people who've listened to your ERcast episode where you mentioned the NP, it's all very positive. But I want to know, how can we make our relationship better with our physicians? If I was a PA working alongside with you, how would we work to make that relationship even better, where it's a two-way street, we're learning from each other, I can go with you with questions and not feel like I'm wasting your time or being a burden to you to ask you things on top of, because you kind of mentioned that in your own little ERcast episode, we're calling it. So I just want to know, how do we make that relationship better?
There has to be the expectation beforehand of what's going to happen. Are you going to be available for questions or not? And the answer is always yes, but you know, that has to be established. And there are some docs, and you know, at some points in my career, I was that doc when those questions would just, you know, throw me over the edge because I was so task saturated. And I think that from the physician standpoint, being receptive to those questions and realizing that you will have extra work beyond the patient load you see in front of you. So having that expectation beforehand, that's essential. From the PA or NP perspective, realizing that those questions have to come at the right time. When they come at a time of our task saturation, you will not get the proper answer. And so that has to be clearly stated. And there can't be any, you know, hurt feelings. Well, maybe there will be, but there shouldn't be, because that's also going to interfere with future interactions. Say, hey, I've got this patient. Can you come back to me in 10 minutes? I'm task saturated and I want to give you my full attention. That's what I'll say. That is a point that I find stressful, is when that it's like a little toothpick added on to a 1,000-pound pile of wood, but that little toothpick went, oh gosh, I that's just distracted me, and I've got all this other stuff going on. So I need to have the free brain space to do that. And, you know, the PAs and NPs I work with now, I mean, they're all A-game players.
They're not asking you the little silly questions, basically. The things they could have looked up on their own.
Actually, I really don't care. I don't care what the question is. I always want to talk about it. If it's a question that they have, or if it's even something that they're uncomfortable with, we all do this. We'll, you know, we'll kind of know the answer, but maybe we'll call a consultant just to confirm what our gestalt was. Or, you know, as physicians, we'll talk to our partners and say, hey, what do you think about this? The PA or NP does not always have that luxury, because the assumption is, well, now that conversation is in that chart and it's all, you know, official. And, you know, the bouncing a case off someone has a much different relationship than it does where it is between two physicians, you know, or like between two emergency physicians, where it's like, hey, we're just kind of bouncing this off each other and, you know, seeing there's something else in the differential.
That's one of the things I love about working at night, because I work with one doc at night. We bounce our ideas off of each other. It's really great when we have the high acuity patient, the one that's in arrest or major trauma or something. We have a natural conversation, and I feel like it's very good with us, because it's a two-way street. And I think that's something that, you know, some docs, some PAs, some NPs all need to understand, is this really should be a two-way avenue. We come from different backgrounds, and we come from different levels of experience. And unless I miss something, I don't think I'm an expert in everything. I don't think you're an expert in everything. There may be some things I may know a little bit more of, maybe a little bit more than you, but I know there are things that you know more than I do. And so I think we need to work as a team for that role. A couple of things that I've done myself. So I do try and look up, if there's something that I know, hey, this is something a little more basic, I should probably know this, I'm going to spend time looking up before I bother someone else who's already task saturated, just like I'm task saturated. But one of the things I like to do, and maybe Rob, maybe I'm not doing the right thing here, I want your feedback on this, but when I see that someone is in the middle of something, whether they're dictating a note or they're trying to put orders in for this new patient that just came in, whatever the case may be, I can tell they're busy. I don't want to be the EKG guy. Look at this EKG. Look at this EKG. I just got this EKG. And it's normal sinus rhythm and everything looks great on it. I'm going to wait a second, and I'm going to stand back. I stand back for about 1 or 2 seconds, the time it takes me to approach the desk usually, and see, what are they doing right now? Are they really busy? Are they just looking at their phone? You know, what are they doing there? Second step is, if they are busy, I stand off to the side, and I don't loom over them. I try not to loom over them, but I let them kind of know I'm there, and I'm going to wait, and I'm going to wait until they're ready. And if it looks like they have a break in their task, I'm just going to say, I have a quick question for you. Is that okay? And I wait until they can actually kind of look and talk to me, and then we discuss from there. But I don't just interrupt them. I try not to do that, because I know what it's like to get interrupted. This is something that one of the shops I work at, we're trying really hard to fix, is how do we avoid excess interruptions? And so we've come up with a few ways to get around that, but it still happens. But I just don't want to contribute to it any more than I absolutely have to. If it's a really sick patient and, hey, I need you to take a look as soon as you can, that's a little different. But usually I'm also taking care of these patients well enough that we can keep things rolling along. But for this, I have a question type thing, that's my approach right now to try and do that. What do you think?
Well, I want to know, how are you trying to get rid of interruptions at your other place? Because that's like the holy grail.
The holy grail, yeah. Okay, so a couple of things there, and this is still experimental. A lot of times, I'm sure you've been asked this, can the patient eat? Can the patient have something to drink? Can the patient whatever? You know, something that, can the patient watch TV? Well, I don't see a reason why not.
You've never been asked that, come on.
Oh, Rob.
you have.
Would you like to come visit me sometime? No, so I get asked things like that. And a lot of this I leave up, or can the patient get up to go to the bathroom? I don't know, can they? I mean, you know, it's just stuff like that. Big ones are eating, drinking, and how long is it going to be, or where am I going to go? Am I going to go upstairs to the floor? Am I going to go home? And so one of the things that they have developed, I'm sure you have in your room, in your patient rooms, you got some sort of board, and your board probably says your doctor today is whoever, your nurse today is whoever. You know, it's got probably something like that. Does it have one?
You know, we have these dry erase boards that are really hard to erase. They bought.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
I was like, come on, really, come on. I mean, you couldn't get the one from Office Depot where you can just rub your hand on it and it's erased. But yes, we do have those.
Okay, so on that board, they added, and actually they started out as a laminated piece of paper before they bought new boards to see if it worked. So they bought a laminated piece of paper, which is great because those still erase pretty well. And it has NPO, yes or no, and then dispo, home or admit. Or transfer. I think that's how it's phrased. And so what you do is when you go into the room with each new patient, you know, the nurse hopefully or whoever put the patient in the room or cleaned the room has cleaned that little piece of paper. But then you go back and you grab the marker and you circle what your plan is. Now, if you don't know a dispo status, you don't know a dispo status. But if you know that someone is going to be NPO because they have abdominal pain, well, you put them as NPO and you circle that and you're done. And that has worked some. The other thing, too, is in the standard order sets, because they have a really, really good set of standard order sets, it automatically says they're NPO until I remove that order. So it's just part of the protocol. No questions asked, just throw that in the protocol until otherwise. So that's some of the examples of like what they're doing to try and help interrupt task disruption.
Yeah, kind of some low-hanging fruit. And then it also engages the provider to, you know, have an active role in that, because if you don't circle those things, you don't fill those things out, well, you're going to get interrupted more. So it behooves you to do that.
Exactly. It's something that it's your own reward. You know, let them leave you alone by just circling. You know, it literally takes a couple of seconds to grab the marker, circle it, and put the marker back in its spot. And please put it back in the same spot, otherwise you lose it. So yeah, that's kind of what I thought. What do you think of that stuff?
Oh, I think any systems activity that is designed for improved efficiency in the right way, not, you know, not that we're improved like making widgets, but that takes unnecessary tasks out of our hands is great. I don't want to take necessary tasks out of our hands, but unnecessary ones, just absolutely fantastic. All of the extraneous paperwork and phone calls and clickety clickety clacks that we have to do, it's so ridiculous.
I couldn't agree with you more. What do you think about the whole standing off to the side and waiting and kind of doing that?
That, oh, right. Yeah, the original question. I think that's I think that's probably the most effective plan that I've seen, or most effective method that I've seen. Our EKG techs do that as well. And as far as the EKGs go, they, you know, I kind of want them in my face, because I want that to be a very quick stimulus response. And that particular task interruption I'm okay with, because it's, and this, we'll get back to your original question, but back to, but to the EKG, because that is a single question, single answer, STEMI, yes or no. And, you know, granted, there can be some other stuff on there. And, you know, I'll just say this one time, I was looking through EKGs, this is many, many years ago, and a nurse handed me the EKG, and, you know, it was in the practice of, okay, STEMI, yes or no, STEMI, yes or no, STEMI, yes or no. And there was something else on that EKG that needed my attention. But I was like, yo, STEMI, yes or no. And I handed it back to her, but she wouldn't take it. And she just stood there with her arms crossed. And I was like, wait, what? And she just looked at me, and I looked at it again. I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's, it needs some attention, wasn't it, STEMI? But that particular task, I'm fine being interrupted with. With a question, yes, sort of kind of hovering, but not like in your face hovering, but just kind of in the distance. And then the doc knows that you're there. I mean, it's not like you're completely invisible. But yeah, and then coming in when you see that the task is done. But also, you know, both sides have to be honest. Like, hey, I have too much on my plate right now to address this. Come back at X, Y time, which unfortunately is going to interfere with your flow, because at your flow, as the PA's flow, you know, it's like, hey, at this point in my care, I've got the question. So it's going to slow things down a little bit there. Not a perfect answer, but I do like your approach.
Well, and I think that's something, I'm glad you recognize that, because I feel like sometimes I get ignored of, oh, that's no big deal, you can wait. Like, no, I've also got my own panel of patients I need to get cleared out. And if it's something like that where I I've done this before, I've walked to the desk and I've turned back around and walked back, because I'm like, there is no way in hell I'm going to bother them right now. Whatever they're dealing is much more important. I'll go see the next patient. We'll figure it out in the meantime. So And sometimes I do the like post hoc if I'm pretty damn confident, but it's just one of those I just need a double check kind of thing. I may sometimes talk about it afterwards and just say, hey, did I do the right thing? And almost universally, yes, you know, or, you know, it's something you got to be very careful with, though. And so I'm not encouraging the new grads to maybe necessarily do that, or the people who are less confident about what they're asking for. But sometimes if it's just that reassurance, or as I've told people, because we have some weird protocols at my main shop, I'm just saying, hey, this is my mandatory or my compulsory or whatever I say. I kind of, again, be a bit of a smart ass, but I'm like, this is my compulsory thing I had to tell you about. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. So sometimes I do that, but I try and be very careful about it at the same time. If you don't mind, in our grab bag discussion, do you have time for one more thing?
Of course, Jeff.
Okay. So another thing that someone else talked about, and I thought it was a really good question to ask. So Rob, you've been working in a smaller shop, but you're now in the big town. You're in the big house, I think, as one person called it. You're in the big house now. So.
The big house. Yeah. Well, I was, yeah, for the last 4 years, I was in a, I think it's like a semi-rural hospital. It wasn't, we'll get back to your question. I kind of interrupted you there, but I was at a, it was in a town of 10,000 people, mm-hmm. but we had a really big catchment area. So we actually, it was a tiny hospital with a cath lab.
Oh, so you're kind of like in my shop where it's like, now was your cath lab manned every day? Because we only have it 2 days a week, which is weird.
Yeah, it was 24/7, man.
Oh,
it
wow. Was, like yeah. The big leagues, you know.
I tell you, know what else we had?
What?
Neurosurgeons. Yeah.
Well. I mean, that's you're tertiary.
but now I work at a
the big house,
the big trauma center and the like.
Now you're getting a lot of pay. Like you said, you get people from catchment area. We do too. I mean, the shop I was at the very first time round, super small place. We didn't really have hardly any specialty. Now we've got certain specialties, not a lot, but we've got some. I work in it's still a community ED, but it's kind of like yours. We've got a lot of advanced people, so we can manage to keep a lot in-house, but it's not necessarily we're going to be getting a lot of patients from outside facilities. Now, you, on the other hand, because you are working at a tertiary care center now, you're getting transfers into you. And so let's go with our first scenario because it's kind of two different questions. So the first scenario, I'm transferring a patient, and let's say it's supposed to be an ED to ED transfer because it's a trauma patient. Because in my area, at least, a lot of times we're not usually talking to the trauma surgeon. To save time, we're actually talking to another ED physician. You're the guy who's going to get the phone call on the other end. I'm going to be consulting you. What do you want to hear?
Well, so I've been in this situation many times in different EDs. And, you know, so... Well, I think that there's two sides of this, right? There's what do I want to hear and how do I want to be? What do I want to hear? Well, I guess the necessary information, what happened? What are the injuries? What's happened so far? What's their current status? And there we go. And also what consultants have been consulted so I know what's going on. You know, our setup is a little bit different. I mean, every place is a little bit different. So just kind of speaking more generally, but being on the receiving end of that, because, you know, a lot of us are on the receiving end just in general, right? Even if you're at a small hospital, the clinics are going to send you patients, or, you know, an even smaller hospital is going to send you patients. And the answer is that you are like magnanimous in answering that call. And the person on the other side is dealing with a stressful situation, much more stressful than you will have to deal with, because, you know, if you're the receiving hospital, then you have more support than they do. So they're having to package them. They're having to manage all this other stuff, you know, just like you will for somebody who's sicker, who you have to send to a bigger hospital. So just being really receptive and not giving people a hard time, you know, ask questions, ask the questions you want to know. Ask them in a collegial way, because, you know, ED doc on ED doc violence, even cognitive violence, is just so wrong. But it's so easy because you're just, you know, you're really harried. You're really under the gun. And, you know, I have friends who work in urgent cares and then they transfer into emergency departments. And, you know, these are ED docs working in urgent cares. They're ED docs working in the emergency department. And the receiving ED docs are jerks sometimes. Like, whoa, come on, you just, if somebody is concerned enough to send you a patient, the patient's coming in, just be kind. You know, be thoughtful, ask nice questions, but just be nice.
Is this like Bill and Ted's be excellent to one another?
It's totally. You know what? There's the mantra of the century. Be excellent to one another. That's totally it right there.
And other ways to put that is don't be a dick, but
yeah, you could say that. However long that monologue went on, that could summarize it really nicely.
Okay, so now here's the other scenario. I've already talked to the consultant. The consultant has accepted the patient, but it's going to be ED to ED for whatever reason. You know, we need to make sure they're stabilized first before we put them on the floor, before we take them to surgery, whatever else. You know, it's going to be ED to ED, not a direct admit. So I got to now talk to you, the accepting physician on the E side. Does this change what you want to hear? I mean, is this one of those like, oh yeah, consultant's coming. Okay, just tell me, are they alive or dead? Let's move on kind of thing. Does this change anything for you at all?
I'll say it in two ways. One is cognitively, it probably does if I know that there's a whole team of consultants who are already going to be involved and coming down and I'm not the only party who is going to be responsible for all of the diagnostic data and the follow-up and the continuing care. So cognitively, probably yes. In practicality, when that patient comes into the emergency department, you know, I may be the only one there. And so I need to know just as much as any of the other people, maybe not to the same degree as everything you would tell the neurosurgeon about the, you know, the nuance of X, Y, or Z. But, you know, if it's an ED to ED, I do want to know the same stuff that I had mentioned before. Because if I am the receiving physician, then I will be receiving the patient, or one of my partners will be possibly, but I will be receiving the patient. And, you know, the more I know, it's kind of like writing on an X-ray request. You know, the more you write for the radiologist, the better interpretation they can give. So I don't think that it changes my mindset as far as the objective information I want.
Really good point. That's what I was hoping to hear is, because sometimes I talk to... like I've talked to the ED physician after I talked to the specialist, and sometimes pretty much as soon as you say the word consultant or specialist, like, okay, whatever. And they're kind of done with the conversation. And I understand a lot of that because they're in a busy environment already. It's one more task that they have to work with. I still try and give them the big points, like we were talking about, you know, what's this patient here for? What are the major findings? What's the overall plan? And that seems to work pretty well, but I've noticed that sometimes, that's why I was kind of asking you, is what your feedback is there. But you did an excellent job answering that question, and I appreciate that.
Well, right on. But I'll tell you this, that sometimes it depends on what the responsibility of the receiving doctor is. Now, sometimes there's one person who's assigned to the phone, and they're just going to be taking all the calls. They might not get the patient. And you have a different level of anxiety in knowing about that patient than if you're for sure getting the patient.
That's funny that you mentioned it like that, because I didn't really think about that until the shop that I work at, the bigger one, they assign their PA essentially to take most of the phone calls. And if the PA is not around, if they're in seeing a patient, then the doc will take it or whatever. So it's not a set stone, but it's usually pretty clear cut that if the PA is around, they're going to get asked that question to take that patient, that phone call. And you're right. The mentality difference, I still get a lot of the information. I want to, whatever you want to tell me, I'm happy to, I'll listen. I'll take my notes and whatever else, but you're right. There is a bit of a mentality difference. I'm like, oh, this is our plan. We're going to transfer this patient. You know, this patient's going to go to the floor already, or this is going to be a quick consultant look, or, oh, this is someone we're going to need to totally work up down here. It does change things. Glad you actually said that, because I'm thinking now I understand that view, because yeah, I may be seeing that patient, but not necessarily. So no, I understand what you mean there.
So in the place where I'm working now, you know, if I'm receiving the call, mm-hmm. I'll probably see the patient as well. And, you know, I really want to know, or, you know, it's such that, you know, I will be working very closely with my partners and they'll come over and ask me. And so, yeah, I really, really want to know. But you actually bring up another point, and it's something that I've thought a lot about, and it's something I've had to make an active effort to have the right approach. Over the years, it's become more common for a PA or an NP to be on call, or the primary call for the consultant, whether it's a cardiologist or a surgeon or whatever. I think that there can be, and I hear this as well, and I hear this from the PAs, I think that there can be a barrier to having a full collegial, full information conversation with that person, whereas it's usually a physician calling and they're calling a PA. It's like, dude, there's a PA on the line and they're not going to be able to answer my question. And, you know, how deep do I have to go? And that there is a perceived power differential in that the physician's thinking, oh, it's a PA. I mean, I don't need to go deep into this and I don't need to address them as if they are a true peer, which is a huge mistake because number one, they are working in that specialty, have a lot of knowledge. The more information you can give them, the better. And two, they are the ones taking call. The more information you can give them, the better. Maybe they're going to be talking to the specialist about this in a little while. But, you know, kind of mistreating a PA or not having that conversation on an equal level, like the same conversation you would have with the cardiologist, is going to be 360 degrees of disservice. So I would just make a plea or a call to action to the physicians who are listening that when you have that call to that PA, just think about, all right, what's my mindset when I'm talking to that person? Am I thinking, you know, you're not the final answer here, so just get me to the attending? Or, all right, I'm going to engage you in this conversation as I would with the attending. And Alex, maybe, hey, we need to get the attending involved in this because, you know, things are really going down the toilet. But starting off, just be aware of where your attitude is.
I couldn't have said that better myself. And I really appreciate you saying that because I think it sounds different when a physician says it than a PA is telling a physician that this is the type of relationship we need. So thank you so much for that part. Another thing.
Well, I've been guilty of it, man. For years. I worked so closely with PAs and, you know, they would come down and we'd be chit-chatting and, you know, you build great relationships with them. But I didn't even realize that my attitude was not good. And it wasn't in the pejorative, but it was, you know, I'm not like fully open to all of the information that I'm giving you as I would be to, well, now it is, but as I would be to the specialist.
And I actually had to caution PAs the same thing because I've caught myself once or twice where I started to almost do the exact same thing you're saying. That's really embarrassing when you're a PA and you're about to diss another PA and you're like, no, we're on the same team. Keep in mind, for any of those who are still in doubt, there's a reason why this person has been held responsible for holding that phone to take that call. They do know their stuff and they know when they need to talk to someone else. It's good to say, hey, this is a really sick patient. If you want to start that way, hey, this is a really sick patient. I don't know what other resources you need, but let me tell you about what I've got. And I think if you say it that way, I wouldn't perceive that as hostile, especially if you say it in that sense. But they're going to make their own, okay, who do I need to talk to and what time frame do I need to talk to them? Because I feel like a lot of people who are in these types of roles, they're already very smart and very knowledgeable and they have an appropriate skill set to take on these types of tasks. So no, I think you did an excellent job covering that point.
Hey, thanks, man. I feel really validated when you say that.
The PA is not pissed. Well, Rob, I've already taken up way too much of your time and you're an awesome human being. I'm not trying to suck up. I'm just so glad that you could come on and talk to us for a little bit. But I think we did a great job with the grab bag. I mean, it sounds like patient satisfaction is going to be the front part because, I mean, who doesn't want to talk about patient satisfaction these days? good or bad. But really, I appreciate you coming on. I don't know, do you have any kind of closing remarks you want to make?
Boy, closing remarks. Those are always so hard because...
Just be excellent to one another.
Just be excellent. You know what? That's the answer right there. Be excellent to one another. And if I could do that with a slow air guitar strum like they would do in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, I would do it. Well, you know what? I'm doing it right now. Well, not really, but just visualize that in your head.
Can you add the audio? All right. So thank you again, Rob, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Can you give us the tagline, please?
Until next time, continue to give total care everywhere.